Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Well, good afternoon. I'm excited. It's Monday. Nice long work week. And we're starting off today with producer Mike joining in for a Mikey Monday. We haven't done this in a long time, an actual Mikey Monday. It's been months. Months!
Mikey Tuesday.
Once you get out of a habit, Mike, it's tough to get you back into it.
Well, that's true. It's hard to get us started, too.
So, just ask me a question about anything.
What's the meaning of life?
Boy, you got me there.
We can do a lot with that, I think.
That was a good one. That was too easy.
All right, no. Ask me another question.
That's got an answer for everything. When is the shutdown going to end?
Let me check with the powers that be.
Oh, that was perfect.
Yeah, please
do. You're doing really well.
I feel like Michael Harrison with his Donald Trump pen.
You're doing really well with the questions. All right, that's all the questions I need. Read me a passage from a book if you have one nearby. Just pick up a book, open it to any
page. This is a random page.
Stick your finger. Yeah, just read something. Okay?
Oh, bear with me. It's a little long. It won't be too long, and I'm not the best public speaker. All right, this is from Amusing Ourselves to Death. Neil Postman wrote this in 1985 for a little
85.
Little context. To understand the role that the printed word played in providing an earlier America with its assumptions about intelligence, truth, and the nature of discourse, one must keep in view that the act of reading in the 18th and 19th centuries had an entirely different quality to it than the act of reading does today. For one thing, as I've said, the printed word had a monopoly on both attention and intellect, there being no other means, besides the oral tradition, to have access to public knowledge. Public figures were known largely by their written words, for example, not by their looks or even their oratory. It is quite likely that most of the first 15 presidents of the United States would not have been recognized had they passed the average citizen in the street. This would have been the case as well of the great lawyers, ministers, and scientists of that era. To think about those men was to think about what they had written, to judge them by their public positions, their arguments, their knowledge as codified in the printed word. You may get some sense of how we are separated from this kind of consciousness by thinking about any of our recent presidents, or even preachers, lawyers, and scientists, who are or who have recently been public figures. Think of Richard Nixon, or Jimmy Carter, or Billy Graham, or I could, you know, insert Donald Trump, or Barack Obama, mm-hmm. or Albert Einstein. And what will come to mind is an image, a picture of a face, or a video, most likely a face on a television screen. Of words, almost nothing will come to mind. This is the difference between thinking in a word-centered culture and thinking in an image-centered culture. So, I don't know. I just...
Well, that's great. I love that.
Yeah, thanks.
I think it's wonderful to it's wonderful just to think about thinking changing.
Yeah, it's...
And I'm not sure... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it is changing. You know, it's a living thing, I guess.
The only thing I'm not sure I agree with in that piece you just read is the very end of it. This is the difference between thinking in a word-centered culture versus an image-centered one. Because it's... I'm not sure if that quite is defining the difference.
Yeah.
It might shift us out of caring about what people say. I mean, I'm often struck by how we prop people up in the media to become big public figures like JFK or Martin Luther King or whoever they are. And what do we know? What does the average person know of an idea, a thought, a belief of John F. Kennedy or Martin Luther King?
Yeah.
But for one phrase that's repeated in a loop anytime they mention JFK.
Sure. But I mean, that the JFK...
Ask not.
JFK is a good example. I mean, I think what the book is more talking about, the book is about how we've kind of turned into a entertainment-centric society and culture. And I mean, the JFK versus Nixon debates is like a classic example of the power of television, right? I mean... That's more what this is
yes.
talking about, as opposed. It's more about we've switched from a substantive
right.
information based culture to a very shallow looks and sound
yes.
based culture, and we.
Well, I love that point that we're not absorbing ideas and we're not judging based on ideas. I mean, I say this all the time about Trump. I'm so sick of having discussions with people about Trump, where they're not talking about anything except what they've heard in the media. And the media doesn't talk about anything any day except what it said the day before, going back to the beginning of Trump's campaign. They've been totally obsessed with him since he started running, and they say nothing about him. No, nobody in America knows anything about any of his policies because the media machinery is fixated on the superficiality of who he is so that they can convince people over the long haul that he's unfit for the White House and thus make him lose his reelection bid. It's an amazing thing.
It's not even, they're not trying to convince people. It's not, they're not convincing anybody. It's just plain brainwashing at this point. I mean, they just keep repeating the same thing.
That's a form of convincing, I think.
Is it? I guess.
You know,
it's the same.
But whatever, it's bulldozing the entire culture into the rejection of somebody based on taking this huge horn and just blowing it with a noise that destroys people's ability to function. But your point is the one that dominates the idea, and that is that we don't know what people are thinking. And we, you know, I get concerned sometimes. We don't even know what people who we're listening to all the time or thinking about all the time are thinking. We don't know what our families think. We don't have discussions about what people think. I think it's removed that whole dynamic from us. So, yeah, we don't know what public figures stand for. We don't know what each other stand for.
It's scary.
There's this thing about the internet. We're talking to producer Mike, Mikey Monday.
Hello.
There's this idea about the internet, the way it communicates information, that I'm always fascinated with as a metaphor, that information doesn't go in a continuous stream of data, but the data is broken up into packets, and each of these packets is sent flying off to the other end, and they may get there in a different order and be rearranged so that they stream directly into something that they are intended to give us. But I feel that that idea of ideas being chopped into bits, into phrases, into words, into pictures,
yeah,
and we absorb them. We walk around the world and we just get these things flying into us, and they get assembled not in any particular order, but just based on whatever narrative we have set our minds to.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're in a Trump is the worst thing that ever happened to the world mode, then we absorb certain things a certain way. And if we're, you know, whatever we're thinking about,
yeah,
it doesn't.
Yeah, it works. It's what you said. It works. However, whatever predisposition we have in our our mind. That's what it works with.
So this idea that we don't think anymore, or we can't think as well because we don't know the ideas of the people who we recognize and are absorbed with, and why are we absorbing them and recognizing them would be the question. Simply because somebody puts their picture on television.
Yeah, well, I guess I think we're just addicted to entertainment. We just, I don't know. I guess to me, I just relate it to our affluence, and I always felt like, you know, I admire homesteading lifestyle or like living off the grid and this type of thing, because I just think, you know, you have more of a connection with nature and you're kind of in more of a survival mode or a different type of survival mode where the realities of the natural world are more present in your life. And nowadays, you know, everyone gets stuck in whatever they're doing, whether it's like 9-to-5 grind or whatever. You're just living a modern life, which is full of affluence and technological, handicaps or however.
Well, let's get a little more precise with this. What the modern world really does us is it distracts us constantly.
Sure.
It's bombarding us with inputs constantly, and we become dependent on those inputs. We are checking, if our phone isn't dinging for us, we check it to see why it hasn't, we must have missed
yes.
something. You know, we're looking for this input from the world so that makes us, that validates us, this interaction we have with the outside world. But you talk about somebody who's going off the grid or somebody who's going into a cabin and going and living, something that I have no interest in doing, but I would have interest because I'm so hooked on luxury. If it was a luxurious cabin, I wouldn't mind. But you know, this COVID era has been a chance for us to experiment with this a little bit, because we've had periods of time that are continuing into the moment where we just can't do certain things or we're inclined not to for safety reasons. And that means that there's less ability to distract ourselves. That is to even jump in the car and go get an ice cream or to jump in the car and go see a movie. Have you seen a movie in the last 6 months? Well, you weren't a big movie guy anyway, right?
Not really. I mean, you're talking in the theaters or just
yeah.
in general? Are the theaters even open? I don't even know. So
no, I don't think they are. I haven't forgotten, though, because that's one of those things I like to do just to do something. It's
yeah.
fun to go to the movies on a Saturday morning or a Sunday night, whatever, and slump into one of those comfy chairs and just have your senses bombarded with inputs from somewhere else because you get to shut yourself off.
Yeah.
It's a Novocaine kind of thing.
Well, people can just do that anywhere now if you have a smartphone.
Yes, and I think we're just accustomed to that, permanently being bombarded and not have to think about our own thoughts and absorb our own feelings and live with ourselves.
What could go
Interesting
wrong?
Interesting stuff. Exactly. It's Mikey Monday. Stay with us, WTIC. It's Monday. Mikey Monday. My producer, Mike. This is something we started, probably a year ago, but then along came COVID. Mondays got invaded by Ned, and everything got invaded by COVID, including the Mikey Monday.
King Corona.
Do, 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 do. Yeah, so what did you want to go back over?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned something before, you know, we were talking about the media's relentless narrative attack on Trump and how their only critiques you ever hear are just about like his personality or all that. It's all the same stuff for the last 5 years, basically. But I thought it was interesting because I kind of view it the same way the whole COVID narrative is, you know, it's because, you know, at the beginning, when Trump was running or even like at the beginning of his presidency, you know, everyone was like terrified about like, oh, he's going to start World War III or, you know, he's going to just destroy the country and tear down.
That's right. He would have his finger on the button.
Yeah,
there was that
yeah,
fear.
All that.
It was too dangerous.
But nothing ever came to fruition, obviously. I mean, obviously, you know, maybe he's done something that's going to destroy the country in 50 years or something. I don't know. But nothing's happened yet. We're still all alive. We're not in any wars. You know, the economy was doing pretty good before COVID. I don't know if that's all related to him or not, but it, you know, well, nothing
you know,
went
we
down
have
the
to judge him the way we have to. Yes. I mean, the risk was we couldn't survive a Trump presidency.
Yeah.
And it's turning out that that may be true, but not because of Trump, but because of his opposition.
Yeah. But my connection from that to the whole COVID saga is, well, at the beginning of COVID, everyone, you know, they were freaking out. It's going to be 50 million people are going to die. And it's, you know, it's the new plague and all this stuff. And we're still living as if that's true, but it's nowhere near that. But the rhetoric that's coming out from the powers that be, that aren't Trump, the media powers that be, I suppose, it's the same tonality. Yeah, it's yep. So I don't know. I just find that interesting. Mean,
the whole dynamic of how we get played because there is a media. Because there is this machine. And I guess that's what the quote that you read us from whomever that was.
Neil Postman.
I guess that's what it's really about, is that there is this big horn that they get to blow. And it's not very responsive to what the people need to be hearing. But we keep tuning in anyway. We keep watching it anyway. We keep absorbing it, these little packets of information, biased information designed to cause us to react in certain ways. And it's not in our best interest, and we're not conscious of what they're doing to us. And anybody who absorbs a media message like the anti-Trump message, the thing I ask, and I don't know if anybody can respond to it, is if you are caught up in the anti-Trump message, how appalling it is, how unfit he is. We will never survive. We can't survive if he gets reelected. He can't be reelected. All that venom and vehemence and outrage and the impossibility of it all has been going on for 5 years. And we've survived the 5 years, okay, but for the media machine that's been pounding that message.
Yeah, things are worse than ever. Don't you know?
Yeah, well, they are. But it wasn't Trump's doing. It was the people who decided that Trump was going to cause all those things. Why do they fear him so much? Why is he such an outrage? Or is this just the normal discourse getting elevated? People being more brazen, more outrageous, more ugly because that's now allowed as we quote unquote progress.
Yeah. I mean, I look at it kind of from a bigger picture, even where this is just a coalescing of events of history, I guess, where like all these different factions of power are intertwined and intermingled and just like funneled into the here and now. And, like whether it's like the broken political system and the biased media, and you know, it's like everything works together in this downward spiral where I don't know where it leads, but we're gonna find out, I guess.
And I wonder if this is really the centralized power that
sure
was feared by the founders, that you know, the media allows power to sit in New York or Washington or LA, wherever its sources are, and just command the attention of the whole country. And that's something that old system that you started off telling us about, where we would hear the ideas of great thinkers and ponder those ideas and know them by those ideas. What a different period of time that was. Producer Mike pushing a good topic at us. We'll talk more coming up after news on WTIC.
All my wolves begin to howl. Wake me up, the time is now. Whoa, can you hear the trumpet? Whoa, there's a revolution coming. Wild things that turn me on.
Mike, ask me a question. About anything.
What's your favorite
just
car?
Ask me a question. Favorite car?
Yeah. Boy, you got me there.
Oh, come on, Ned. That was an
easy
one.
Oh, it's Chevy.
One.
Chevy is his favorite car.
Boy, you got me there.
Yeah, this one will do just fine. Wish I could pull that cut up right now.
He did do it. The equipment's too slow today.
Maybe. I could find it.
He did do a little pat on it, didn't he?
Yeah, he patted the steering wheel.
like he knew it and loved it.
Yeah.
It was a rental, I think.
Probably. Yeah.
Anyway, that was fun talking about that excerpt. And did you have something else like that you wanted to share?
I love this book. I haven't even finished it yet, but it's like highly recommended. Amusing Ourselves to Death: Public Discourse in the Age of Show Business.
And it goes back a few decades.
I mean, it was written in 1985, but it's very prophetic, and I don't know, it's just interesting. It just makes me worry about where we're headed, especially with the internet and social media and all this. It just seems like it's, entertainment is our first mode of operation as a populace, if that makes
sense.
But
I wonder if we're maybe coming right now to, the hope about COVID is that we start to We revisit things from the past, like a slowed down life, like quiet time. I mean, I can't watch enough Netflix, and I don't want to fill up all the time. And I find myself turning to a book more often because it's not just I have an hour I can watch something. You know, there's bigger stretches of time because you don't waste as much time running around as we used to. Plus, I order everything. If I can avoid going to a store, I love just ordering stuff online and having it show up. My preferred method of shopping any day of the week. And there's some big portion of the population that survived by walking around malls. I don't even know if they bought anything. But I just have this image of millions of Americans on the most beautiful days of the year. Because whenever I drive by a mall on a 90-degree day, bright sunshine, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the parking lots are packed.
Are they? I was gonna reboot that. I don't feel that. I don't think anybody goes to the mall even before COVID anymore. But
the malls are dying. I'm talking over a large swath of time, but I still see them as busy places.
Sure.
But I could be wrong because I don't go inside very often. I mean, I really have no interest and haven't in decades in a mall. And I just find their stores have always been the worst places to shop. I'm not sure why. So I could be totally wrong. Anybody still love malls? 860-522-9842. Is the mall over? The mall has been dying because of the death of retail.
I mean, there's different types of malls, though. I mean, you know, the mall that we're talking about, I think we're talking about, like, is dying. But, I mean, there's strip malls.
The big indoor mall.
Yeah, like, the strip malls are still alive. I mean, I think that's where I get wherever I got to get stuff at, I guess.
Yes, but those are different, though. Those are right by the side of the road.
Correct.
And you zip, you pull right in front, jump out of the car and run inside and get something. But this old mall idea that goes back 40, 50 years is indoor, 100 stores, 50 stores, whatever. And you walk around in the food court and all that. You have your lunch there, your dinner there. That whole thing, I think, is a big part of this idea of modern life being where we don't ever have to be responsible for our own entertainment and our own well-being. And the outside world entertains us all the time. And that's a scary dynamic, and I think it's a good one to move away from.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
860-522-9842. Talk about malls. Do they still exist in your mind, and do they matter? And I think the Amazon effect is that we can shop, and shopping doesn't have to be the activity. It can go back to being what it's supposed to be, which is just solving a problem. Now we can solve the problem in a minute without leaving the house, without doing anything different.
Yeah, but do you have a problem with the monopoly type of situation that Amazon has turned into? I mean, is that not an issue, or is that that's fine?
I see them as such an innovator, such a powerful force that I assume we will have to deal with that in some way, that it will become problematic. And I know there's parts of it that are problematic already, like for the people who are resellers on the Amazon platform, feeling that they have no voice in the way they're treated. But yeah, I do think that I do think it's wonderful right now, and it's causing great things to happen in the world in terms of changing the way we live in a positive way. But I see a fight coming.
Yeah, well, I mean, what do you see the future? Is Amazon, the model of Amazon, is that's the future? Or we're going to have like five different Amazon-esque companies, like all one's devoted to food, one's devoted to clothing, one's to, you know.
I think the natural flow of these things is one thing gets huge, like Amazon could be. They seem to be winning the smart speaker wars. And so you use Alexa, and then you will do our shopping on Alexa. That's how we'll shop in the future. I think we'll just tell her what we want.
Well, that's already happening.
She asked,
what's the future? Next week?
Well, the technology is there now, but I don't think that's how most people go shopping.
Well, you were just talking about it, basically.
Well, I'm not denying that it exists. I don't think the adoption rates are high. So I order tons of stuff on Amazon, and I love Alexa, but I didn't know you could do this until a few months ago. She said, I noticed from your buying history that you're due for a new pound of coffee. And I don't drink the coffee at home. Rosalie does. So I said, Rosalie, you need a new pound of coffee? And she goes, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. And so I say, I can't say it right now because Alexa's in the room, and she would
do it
if I said it.
Don't do it.
Yeah, but because I've already done it, it's already on order. But I love that. So the innovation is just beginning.
I don't love it, though. I don't like that at all. I don't want Amazon to tell me what I need. How much does that influence you? Like, oh yeah, maybe I will. Like, what if that coffee gives you cancer or something? I don't know. This is a bad example, but I don't know. I just don't like.
No, I don't.
I don't like.
Well,
this.
I don't see any harm in it.
Well,
if you don't like it, don't do
know.
It. But I don't
sure.
see any harm in it.
Yeah.
Because before, I had to hop in the car and drive to the store. Let's get a couple calls in here.
Yeah.
Hey, who's this?
Okay, hi, this is Jeff.
Jeff. Okay, what's up,
Jeff? Hi, Jeff.
How's it going?
Get to the point.
Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, you asked about malls. And, you know,
yes.
I got a little fun story to share. So my wife and I have been living overseas now 5-6 years, just came back. And we were in the Middle East, where malls are sort of are the way of life, right? The only thing you have to do there are malls. And the way you would go to a food court in those malls is you would simply leave your cell phone or your wallet or your purse on the table and walk away from it as a way to sort of reserve your table while you went out and got your food, whatever. Very safe, very wonderful places. And I come back to the United States, and I can't help but see malls. I mean, the whole focus of them is totally different than it is in most of the rest of the places in the world, right? These big, expensive stores, lots of retail, whereas in most places, it's simply a social gathering place first, and then stores second. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see as malls continue to decline, real estate becomes a little cheaper, seeing what that focus of that mall becomes. Because right now, I mean, I compare the malls here to malls in most of the rest of the world, and they're not very good. They're expensive, and they're quite boring, to be honest.
So the activity that you're describing overseas is that it's kind of a town square, the food court. It's a place where you see friends and socialize?
Absolutely correct. A mall is more than just kind of a place to swipe out your credit card, you know, or it's really designed first and foremost, like you say, sort of as a town square. Or, I mean, there's malls every street corner in some of these countries, right? Not necessarily in all, of course, but the first part of mall planning is how does it serve the community? What purpose is it in the community? Not how much retail space can we shove wall to wall and how many stores can we get in there in you know, in one corridor. And so it naturally just draws people, and the stores do generally very well because people want to be in the mall for whatever reasons the mall are there for. And rather than, you know, shops are the priority and, oh, let's try to host something to draw people into the stores. So big difference.
I wonder if that's changing, though, now, because, you know, a lot of the big malls are doing construction. They're revamping how they interface with the outside world, and they're making restaurants more prominent, I think, and health clubs and destinations that you would be going to anyway. And then there's this other style of mall, you know, that's a big outdoor mall, even in cold climates like ours. And I think there's more of a community dynamic there where it's more fun and you feel like you're in an old-fashioned downtown more.
Sure. Sure. Well, my experience has only been limited being back in the States for a short time, but I can tell you that West Farms does not feel that welcoming to me. Maybe there are some other spots I need to try, but certainly Blueback Square fits the bill for me a bit more, right? Because you can walk around and do things. But we still have a ways to go, I feel like, in the state for some of our old malls.
No, I think you're right about West Hartford is the cool place. Thank you, Jeff. And never better than now, because West Hartford has stretched out and made great use of its wide streets to allow restaurants to have bigger outdoor dining and all. That's a good thought, Mike, don't you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. One of my thoughts I had was I wonder how much, if anything, that has to do with like social media. I don't know where he was in the Middle East or how prevalent social media is in Middle Eastern culture. But it seems like the mall as a communal place in America is kind of given way to social media and like virtual communal gatherings. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. But people like their contact with the outside world. It's an interesting. Your mall thoughts, please. 860-522-9842. It's Mikey Monday, producer Mike. Joining this hour, we'll take some more phone calls. We'll talk to Mike. We'll enjoy coming up on WTIC. I'm just finishing up a Honeycrisp.
Mm.
Oh, I love those things. So sweet, so sour, both at once.
The perfect apple.
Oh, they're just outrageous. 860-522-9842. All our callers hung up except this one. Hi, who's this?
This is Steve from Route 8.
Hey, Steve.
Heading towards Mass.
What's up, Steve?
All right.
Well, I'm enjoying your conversation between you and Mike, and I enjoy the fact that you guys can think to a deeper level than the average person today. I think people are capable, but I think they struggle because their muscles in their brains are very flabby because everything's done for them. What I wanted to say is what Mike was saying about the book and how long ago he had read it, or when it was written, I guess, and how apropos it is today. That's something I think, Todd, I would like to hear you expound on, is the idea of how long it takes for people to recognize the changes that have transpired and the damage that has been done that they never thought would be done. You had just mentioned something about the convenience of the lady you talked to there on the computer, and she orders stuff for you, and you don't see any harm in that.
Yep.
I don't think people contemplate enough about the trajectory of these things and how they could cause issues in the future, because they just don't waste the time to think. They live in the moment, and as long as the moment's fun and happy and everything's going well, they don't connect the dots from the past or contemplate the damage that could be done in the future. Like, for instance, I think the ideal situation for humans to live in is to have some certain amount, and I don't know what the balance is, of struggle in their life. Not always to be looking for the ease of things, but to embrace the struggle, because in the physical world, without struggle, we would be totally impotent. Our muscles would be worthless. Our bones would decay.
You're right, Steve. But how do you manage those things? And how do you manage? Because the idea of progress is that it frees us. The idea that we have a washing machine that washes the clothes, that means we can spend an hour watching TV or reading or whatever we choose that we couldn't do before. That's not a bad thing.
Todd, we've been told that, and I've thought a lot about those things over the years. I'm very fascinated by that. And I remember back when I was a child, them telling us about how much food we'd be eating, we'd have all this leisure time to enjoy. And, you know, I feel like a gerbil on a wheel pedaling myself to oblivion, and I'm going to die exhausted because I can't.
Okay, Steve, you brought up a wonderful topic, and I want to hold you there so we can react to it because it's so rich. Thank you for that call, sir. Mike, reaction?
Yeah. No, that was great. I mean, I feel a lot like that. Obviously, I don't have as much experience in life as most of the people listening right now, probably. But yeah, I mean, I totally am in agreement with 90% of the things he said.
The question though is, what do we do with it? So is it, is it bad to have progress? Yeah.
Well,
should progress not be allowed?
Well, why do you think that is progress?
Well, whatever term you want to use for it, that's what we call it culturally, is things progress. They move.
Okay. Well,
innovation happens.
It doesn't mean,
should we stop innovation?
Just because things move doesn't mean they move in a positive direction.
Yeah, but who should decide the direction? The direction is
nobody decides. It just is what it is. I mean, are we any happier when we have all this extra leisure time? Is the goal to be happier?
I think so.
I think
it makes us a lot happier.
Well, it depends what you're doing. Like, if you have an extra hour of time because you don't have to hand wash your clothes. I mean, if you're just watching The Price is Right, I mean, you could be studying something. You could be bettering your life in some way. If you're being productive, then, yeah, it's worthwhile. If you're not, which most people aren't, then what?
So then it comes down to personal challenge. And maybe we're just not up to the personal challenge. But it's up to us, I think, to say we need to be more productive, or we should be making better use of our time.
Yeah, but don't you know, personal responsibility is a taboo thing these days.
Yes, it is. And we, one of the things that's happened now is we've lost the ability to do those things. So put us alone in that cabin in the woods, and we don't know what to do to build a fire or prepare for winter, or store food.
But you either do that or you die, so you don't have a choice. So we have too many choices.
Yes, that could be right, and that's the implication of Steve's question. Thank you, Mike.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.